According to a Pentagon report, at one point during the fighting, unable to contact the Navy for fire support, a frustrated Army officer used his AT&T credit card on an ordinary pay telephone to call Fort Bragg, North Carolina, the headquarters of the 82nd Airborne Division, to have them relay his request. The week after the invasion, NATO staged a command and control exercise, Able Archer 83. It included a practice drill for NATO's defense ministers, simulating the procedures to authorize the use of nuclear weapons. The KGB thought that Able Archer 83 might be a cover for a surprise attack on the Soviet Union. The timing of such an attack, a few weeks before the arrival of the Pershing IIs, seemed illogical. Nevertheless, the KGB concluded that American forces had been placed on alert, a Soviet agent later wrote, and might even have begun the countdown to war. A number of the Soviet Union's own war plans called for using military exercises as a cover for a surprise attack on Western Europe. While NATO played its war game, Soviet aircraft in Poland and East Germany prepared to counterattack. Able Archer 83 ended uneventfully on November 11th, and NATO's defense ministers were totally unaware that their command and control drill had been mistaken for the start of a Third World War. On the evening of November 20th, American fears of nuclear war reached their peak as ABC broadcast The Day After, a made-for-television movie. Directed by Nicholas Meyer, starring Jason Robards, and set in Lawrence, Kansas, the film combined melodrama with a calm, almost documentary account of how the world might end in 1983. Some of the most powerful images in The Day After had nothing to do with mushroom clouds, radiation sickness, or the rubble of a major American city. When Minuteman missiles first appear above Kansas, launched from rural silos there and rising in the sky, the film conveyed the mundane terror of nuclear war, the knowledge that annihilation could come at any time, in the midst of an otherwise ordinary day. People look up, see the missiles departing, realize what's about to happen, and yet are powerless to stop it. About 100 million Americans watched The Day After, roughly half of the adult population of the United States. And unlike most made-for-television movies, it did not have a happy ending. The Pershing II missiles arrived in West Germany, and the Soviet Union's response was purely diplomatic. Its negotiators walked out of arms control talks and didn't return. The relationship between the two superpowers had reached its lowest point since the dangerous events of 1962. And while billions of dollars were being spent on new strategic weapons in the United States, the safety problems with older ones continued to go unaddressed. Earlier in the year, another B-52 had caught on fire on a runway at Grand Forks Air Force Base. It was undergoing a routine maintenance check at 9:30 in the morning when fuel suddenly ignited, created a large fireball, destroyed the plane, and killed five young maintenance workers. No nuclear weapons were involved in the accident, but similar B-52s were being loaded with Mark 28 bombs and short-range attack missiles every day. A program to add new safety devices to the Mark 28, weak links and strong links and a unique signal switch, was begun in 1984. But the retrofits were halted a year later because the program ran out of money. Thousands of the bombs remained unmodified. And the safety problems with the short-range attack missile were worse than originally thought. The high explosives used in the primary of the SRAM were found to be vulnerable to fire. As the missiles aged, they also became more hazardous. The propellant used by their rocket motors had to be surrounded at all times by a blanket of nitrogen gas. When the gas leaked, the propellant became a contact-sensitive explosive that could easily be set off by flames, static electricity, or physical shock. If the SRAMs were poorly maintained, simply dropping them on the ground from a height of 5 or 6 feet could make them explode or take off. The worst probable consequence of continuous degradation is spontaneous ignition of the propellant in a way similar to a normally initiated burn, an Air Force Nuclear Safety Journal warned. Naturally, this would be a catastrophe. The journal advised its readers to follow procedures and give the weapons a little extra care and respect. Bill Stevens retired from Sandia in 1985. His job had been redefined during a management shakeup, and he lacked enthusiasm for bureaucratic infighting. He was disappointed that most of the weapons in the stockpile still didn't possess the safety devices his team had pioneered. But Stevens felt proud of his recent contribution to the safety of the Pershing II. Hoping to eliminate human error during launch exercises with the missile, the Army had decided to computerize the procedure. At Pershing II bases in West Germany, crews would install the warhead, erect the missile, remove the pin that locked the missile onto its launcher, run the countdown until 1 second before launch, and then stop the exercise. The countdown would be controlled by a computer. Stevens felt uncomfortable with the idea. In fact, he thought it was crazy. A software glitch could launch a Pershing II missile, and the Army's software, written in 1980, was unlikely to be bug-free. Stevens refused to sign off on the nuclear weapons system study of the Pershing II missile, citing the risk of a DUL, a deliberate unauthorized launch. In response to his criticisms, a safety device was added to the first stage rocket motor. It required a separate code entered manually before the missile could take off. The warhead atop the Pershing II contained a permissive action link and wouldn't have detonated after an accidental launch. But the Soviet Union wouldn't have known that fact, as the missile on their radar screens headed toward Moscow. Ronald Reagan, despite all his tough rhetoric, had long harbored a fear of nuclear war. His first years in the White House increased that fear. During a command and control exercise in March 1982, Reagan watched red dots spreading across a map of the United States on the wall of the Situation Room. Each dot represented the impact of a Soviet warhead. Within an hour, the map was covered in red. Reagan was shaken by the drill and by how little could be done to protect America. Although some members of the administration viewed the Strategic Defense Initiative as a clever response to the growing anti-nuclear movement, an attempt to show America's aims were peaceful and defensive, Reagan's belief in the plan was sincere. He thought that a missile defense system might